Satyasya satyam vita satya netra. Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyavratam satyaparam tri satyam.
Satyavratam satyaparam tri satyam.
Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye. Satyasya satyam vita satya netram. Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna.
Okay, Satyavratam.
Satyavratam.
The personality of Godhead who never deviates from his vow. And there's a footnote. The Lord vows, Yada Yada Hidharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata Abhyutanam Adharmasya Tadatmanam Svijamyam. Prabhupada doesn't give a translation of this. Does everybody know what it means? Yeah? What happens?
The predominant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rise in the religion.
Then?
Then I descend. In every age, I descend.
What does he mean, Atmanam Sujami?
In my original.
I myself.
I send myself forth. Okay, that you have to. You have to. So unusual to say it that way. I send myself forth, but that's what he says. He manifests his transcendental form. Prabhupada says, to honor this vow, the Lord appeared. Then continuing in the word for words, Satya Param.
Satya Param.
Who is the absolute truth?
Who is the absolute truth?
As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Tri
Satyam.
He is always present as the absolute truth.
He is always present as the absolute truth.
Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation.
Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation.
During its maintenance.
During its maintenance.
And even after its annihilation.
And even after its annihilation.
Satyasya.
Satyasya.
Of all relative truths.
Of all relative truths.
Which are emanations of the absolute truth, Krishna.
Which are emanations of the absolute truth, Krishna.
Yonim. The cause.
Nihitam.
Entered. There's another footnote. The Lord enters everything, even the atom. Andantarasta paramanuchayantarastam. Brahma Samhita 544. Therefore, he is called Antaryami, the inner force. Cha. And. Satye. In the factors that create this material world.
In the factors that create this material world.
Namely the five elements.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, water, fire, air, and ether.
Earth, water, fire, air, and ether.
Satyasya.
Satyasya.
Of all that is accepted as the truth.
Of all that is accepted as the truth.
Satyam.
Satyam.
The Lord is the original truth.
The Lord is the original truth.
Vitta Satya Netram.
Vitta Satya Netram.
He is the origin of whatever truth is pleasing.
He is the origin of whatever truth is pleasing.
Sunetram.
Sunetram.
Satya Atmakam. Everything pertaining to the Lord is truth.
Everything pertaining to the Lord is truth.
Satchidananda. His body is truth. His knowledge is truth. And his pleasure is truth. Tvam. Unto you. O Lord. Sharanam.
Offering our full surrender.
Prapannaha. We are completely under your protection. Okay, translation? And I'll read part of the purport. It's a long purport, but this is an important verse, so maybe we'll spend 2 days on it. This beginning of the prayers. by the demigods to Krishna in the womb of his mother. Very famous verse. Translation: the demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Purport. The demigods or devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true substance, whether within this material world or in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam begins, therefore, with the words Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Satyam Param Dhimahi. That's the beginning and the end of the first shloka. Vasudeva, Krishna is the Param Satyam, the Supreme Truth. The Supreme Truth can be approached or understood by the Supreme Method, as declared by the Supreme Truth. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yava nyaschasmi tatvataha. Bhakti, devotional service, is that the only way to understand the absolute truth. For protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the supreme truth, not to the relative truth. There are persons who worship various demigods, but the supreme truth, Krishna, declares in Bhagavad Gita, Antavattupalam tesham todbodvat alpamedasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Worship of demigods may be useful for a limited time, but the result is antavat, perishable. This material world is impermanent, the demigods are impermanent, and the benedictions derived from the demigods are also impermanent. Whereas the living entity is eternal. Eko nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. Every living entity, therefore, must search for eternal happiness, not temporary happiness. The words satyam param dhimahi indicate that one should search for the absolute truth, not the relative truth. While offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrisimhadev, Prahlad Maharaj said, Balasyaneha Sharanam Pitarao Nisingha Nartascha Chagodam Udanvati Majjato Nau. Paraphrase. Generally, it is understood that the protectors for a child are his parents, but this is not actually the fact. The real protector is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Taptasya tat prativedir ya ihanjaseshtas tavad vibho tanubritam tadupekshitanam. If neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a child, despite the presence of his parents, will suffer, and a diseased person, despite all medical help, will die. In this material world, where there is a struggle for existence, men have invented many means for protection. But these are useless if the Supreme Personality of Godhead rejects them. Therefore, the demigods purposefully say, Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapanna. Real protection can be obtained from you, O Lord, and therefore we surrender unto you. So Prabhupada is a very deep verse spoken in Sanskrit by the demigods. Prabhupada in the purport refers to the beginning of the Bhagavatam, to the Bhagavad Gita, to the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, all in Sanskrit. Prabhupada himself would sometimes also cite the vernacular, Bengali especially. Krishna Mare Rake Ke. Krishna, Krishna Rake Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to kill somebody, who can protect him? And if Krishna wants to protect somebody, who can kill him? This may seem like a very simplistic idea, but it's actually very deep devotional realization. If we could just assimilate that simple statement, we would be advanced devotees. This is what is the basis of real spiritual life, not what you can do to impress foolish people in the material world, how much money you can collect, how much knowledge you can cram into your brain. This is not the basis of real spiritual life. The basis of real spiritual life is to be completely have complete faith that if Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. Then you become Superman. Invulnerable. Invulnerable. You know, nobody can kill Superman except for if they have kryptonite. So, yeah. So, invulnerable. Yeah. If Krishna wants to protect you, nothing can touch you. Nobody can harm you. What does he kill? Nobody can touch you if Krishna wants to protect you. Just be confident of that, and then you become Superman. Then you become a pure devotee. Not by collecting money, not by collecting knowledge, not by doing politics to get yourself a big position. That's not how you become a pure devotee. And who's telling us that? Prahlad. The boy who refused to study politics. Father was the biggest politician. Nowadays we have democracies in many countries. In other countries we have dictatorships. India, big democracy. But it's all, the whole country, the whole purpose of everybody's life is just the acquisition of power. Not even money, just power. That's what India is about. You know, who can dominate? But Prahlad and his father, now modern India is just small time compared to the politics that great demons like Hiranyakashipu play. You know, get elected and stay in power for a few years and get a lot of influence and put money in your bank account. You know, and live in, become powerful and rich and influential. For a few years. That's modern conception of political success. But great demons like Hiranyakashipu, they were thinking about conquering the whole universe, three worlds, and having the demigods serve their feet. And Hiranyakashipu accomplished that. He kicked out the king of heaven. Narada Muni had to entertain him and flatter him, singing songs in his praise. And other demigods had to be serving his feet. That's political success. Not just to get elected for a few years, and enjoy some, be able to abuse other people with your power for a short time. Hiranyakashipu knew how to really dominate and abuse people. He was a real successful politician. But his son Prahlad refused to continue the family business. He refused to become a politician. He was sent to the Gurukula to learn politics, and he refused to study. He refused to learn that lesson, to make friends and enemies, to calculate how to dominate. He refused to get involved in that political life at all. So he's the one who can teach us that... we have to simply take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Power, money, what other people think, is no protection. Even what your spouse and what your parents think is no protection. What is it? Shukadeva Goswami says at the beginning of his instructions, Deha Pachakalatra Adishu Atma Sainyeshu Satsvapi Tesham Pamato Nidhanam Pashanapi Napashati. Your own body, your children, you think that your children will carry out what you have not been able to accomplish yourself. They'll continue your tradition, they'll continue your business, they'll get more children so you can have grandchildren. And then if you can see that the grandchildren of your grandchildren, the saying is, if you get to live long enough to see the grandchildren of your grandchildren, you automatically go to heaven, Svarga. If you live to see the grandchildren of your grandchildren, then you get entrance into heaven. Yeah, so, but that, Prahlad is not interested in that. Balasya neha sharanam. My dear Lord, I'm taking shelter of you. And I mean it. I'm not just here flattering you. Jai Jagadisha Hare. Give me this and give me that. Give me health, give me wealth, give me a house by the sea. Jai Jagadisha Hare. No. I'm actually taking shelter of you. And I'm telling you, and I mean it, that the parents are not the real shelter for a child. What is this about a sinking boat? Nartasya Chagadam. Udanvati Majjato no. Anyway, a sinking boat is not much shelter. You're in the middle of the ocean, and the boat's leaking. You're confident that the boat's going to, protect you. But when the boat starts sinking, you're in trouble. And all our material arrangements are really sinking boats. Maybe sinking slowly, maybe sinking fast. But they're not really going to hold us up. Not permanently. And this is the instructions. Transcendental. What is this small booklet that Prabhupada published? Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. It's one of the first things I bought for 50 cents in New York City, first book I got. And I was so scared by it, by Prahlad's unequivocal preaching, that I read it and then I stuffed it in the bottom drawer of my bedroom and didn't look at it again for months because I was terrified by these instructions. Yeah. Unequivocal condemnation of material life. That everything you think is the basis, the shelter, your shelter is not shelter. You're shelterless. You have no shelter if you don't take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna. So I'll read a little more of the purport. The Lord demands that one surrender unto Him. Svat sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. And further he states, sakrideva papano yas tavasmi iti yachake abhayam sarvada tasmai dadami etad vatam mama. Further he states, well, this is not, sarva dharmam parityajya is toward the very end of the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. So it's not that this comes from the 19th or 20th chapter. This is from the Ramayana. The same Lord Krishna says in his form as Ramachandra. If one surrenders unto me sincerely, saying, my Lord, from this day, I am fully surrendered unto you, I always give him protection. That is my vow. So that's good. Even if we've been fools all our lives and haven't taken shelter of Krishna, it's never too late. From the day that we finally decide to take shelter of Krishna, from that day our life is perfect. Can always make up for our foolishness by deciding now I'll take shelter of Krishna. Prabhupada says, the demigods offered their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he had now appeared in the womb of his devotee Devaki to protect all the devotees harassed by Kamsa and his lieutenants. Thus the Lord acts as Satyavrata. The protection given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to the protection given by the demigods. It is said that Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, But when Lord Ramachandra went to kill him, Lord Shiva could not give him protection. The protection given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to the protection given by the demigods. So Ravana had the protection of Lord Shiva, but that was good. That was useful up to a point. That was useful even for him to like Aranyakashipu in the Satya Yuga, Ravana in the Treta Yuga also conquered the universe. He was powerful in, according to Treta Yuga standards, not as high as Satya Yuga standards. He was also big controller, Ravana. And he was devotee of Lord Shiva, as Hiranyakashipu was devotee of Lord Brahma. And with the help of Lord Shiva, yes, he conquered the universe. But he was destroyed in the end, because Lord Shiva could not and would not be willing to protect him against Lord Ramachandra. I don't think Lord Shiva did anything against Ramachandra on the request of Ravana. I don't know the whole story. But I mean, sometimes Lord Shiva would fight with Krishna, but it was really just play fighting. When Banasura appealed to Lord Shiva for protection, he came out, you know, with his army to fight against Krishna. Lord Shiva did. And it was a play fight, but there was, you know, rivers of blood, you know, filled with arms, legs, and torsos as a result of this play. Lord Shiva, when he plays, he plays rough. And Krishna can also play rough. But for them, it was just a friendly combat. Lord Shiva doesn't actually ever oppose Krishna. He's Krishna's greatest devotee. But what can he do? He's got devotees who are inimical to the Vaishnavas, and they're his devotees. So usually they get destroyed, like this Vrikasura. I don't have to tell his story, but he went to Lord Shiva to get demoniac powers, and he was destroyed by them, and Lord Vishnu himself was involved in that, in tricking Vrikasura into smashing his own head. So not that they're powerless, but there's no way that a great devotee like Lord Shiva is going to act against the interests of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Even if his own devotees want that, they're not going to get it, not from Lord Shiva. So someone like Lord Shiva is practically all-powerful, but he's not going to actually stand in the way of Krishna and his devotees. And other demigods aren't powerful enough to even try. Indra tried to oppose Krishna, and he was severely chastised. Just down the street here. So all the demigods are saying this. You know, we demigods had better take shelter of you, the Supreme Absolute Truth. You are the substance. We're just chips off the old block. We're your parts and parcels. You know, whatever substance we have is borrowed from you. All our powers, even our names and our appearances, are just imitations of yours. We're borrowing your names. We're wearing the clothes, just like in the poor families, the young kids have to wear the leftover clothes. I saw yesterday this boy, Krishna Kanhai, wearing the shirt that we gave him on his first birthday. He must be 4 years old now. You know, from Vrindavan, and I love Vrindavan Dham. He's still wearing the shirt that we gave him on his first birthday. So, you know, poor kid, if he's a young kid in the family, he has to wear hand-me-down clothes from his older brothers and sisters. So like that, the demigods are wearing even their fine helmets and ornaments and outfits. They're actually borrowed from Krishna. Oh, that was used. Okay. So they have to recognize, if they don't want to become, you know, get transferred from the category of demigods to demons, they have to recognize that Krishna is supreme, and they have to take shelter and surrender to him. Surrender voluntarily, not surrender. Demons also surrender because they always get beaten by Krishna. If it requires severing their heads, they surrender. They get surrender by getting their head sliced off. So everybody surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but prapanna means you approach voluntarily. Prapad means to approach somebody for shelter. Prapannosmi. Not, you know, I surrender because you sliced my head off. But I'm voluntarily deciding to come to you for shelter. You know, if you want to slice my head, that's okay. But I'm offering it to you at your feet. That's why you're putting your head down on the ground. Who was it? Oh, it was I don't know if it was Moguls or somebody. They in 1452, they finally defeated Byzantium. Constantinople was the Ottomans, and you know, finally took laid siege to and entered the city of Istanbul. It was the end of the Roman Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire, 1452. And the conquering, you know, emperor of the Ottomans took charge of the city and ordered that all the officials of the Byzantine government come to offer respects. So they one by one came in, you know, bowed down, and got their heads chopped off, one by one. So, you know, when you come to offer obeisances, that's what you're risking. You're putting your head on the ground. You know, you're actually offering, if you want to cut my head off, you can. This is complete surrender. We're offering to Krishna, Ashlishyava Pararatam Pinashtumam. You can embrace me if you want, or you can kick me with your feet. I'm putting my head on the ground. If you want to kick it, what can I do? I'm your devotee. That's Atmanivedanam. And that's what Dandavat is supposed to express. And the demigods are coming now to Krishna. You know, Krishna means business. You know, now he's in town. Entered the material world, demigods can't fool around. They have to come, and even before he's been born, they have to come and offer their homage and let him know that they mean to cooperate with him. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes?
So when Lord Shiva decided to fight on behalf of Bhanasura, does it mean that he temporarily fall into some kind of illusion, or just how to...
I don't know. I guess it's open to interpretation. Sometimes it's understood that, you know, one idea, even among the Vaishnavas, is that Lord Shiva's got like two personalities. He's a devotee and he's also a demon. Sort of a double person.
Demon.
Yeah, right. He's got a rakshasa nature. I don't think we really ascribe to that. But there was some discussion of that between Prabhupada and Bhakti Rakshaka Sridharma, and we have a recorded conversation. But they talk about Lord Shiva being, you know, like having two aspects, and one of them is demoniac. The Madhvites certainly say that. Yeah, Lord Shiva is a demon. And when Bhishma was fighting on the Battle of Kurukshetra, he was infected with demoniac spirit. He was acting as a demon. Anyway, that's one interpretation, one way to look at it. Another way is that it's just Leela, that they're enjoying a fight, Krishna and Shiva. And there's actually no animosity between them. Yeah. Krishna is enjoying the fight, whether he's fighting with Lord Shiva or just some small-time demon. He's out there to have fun. Krishna doesn't, you know, if it's just business, he can send someone else to do the fight. But he goes out there because it's Leela. So if Lord Shiva gets involved too, then it's more Leela. He gets to fight with his devotee. You know, Krishna does what he wants to do. He doesn't. If it's something he doesn't want to do, he gets someone else to do it. So he wants to fight, and if he's fighting with Lord Shiva, then probably both of them want to fight with each other out of sense of to enjoy it, to enjoy a good fight. For Lord Shiva, you know, destroying the whole universe is just his routine business. He does it, you know, every day of Brahma. He just wipes out the whole universe. That's just, you know, ordinary day's work for Lord Shiva. So to have a fight and kill a couple of million people is no big deal. Yeah.
Okay.
At the end of annihilation, Lord Shiva exists?
Yeah, because his body is eternal. He you know, when the material world is wiped out, then he merges back into Vaikuntha.
Okay.
The body of Lord Shiva is eternal. It's not a material body. Well, there's the original Sadashiva, but the original Sadashiva is actually Vishnu. But it's said that his body is eternal. So even if it seems to disappear, it's just going to a different place.
So, Madhvites don't accept this statement?
Well, they say they're pretty much insistent. They can only see it that he's got a dual nature. Half devotee, half demon.
Okay, but like we have this statement that Shiva is the greatest of the amongst Vaishnavas.
Yes. So they acknowledge, yes, that's there, but that's half of his personality. But we have many other statements that you shouldn't see any difference between Shiva and Vishnu, and you know. So I think we're safer off thinking that they're, you know, it's among friends. We don't, you know, not for our business to interpret whether there's any real animosity between them. You know, if Lord Shiva and Vishnu have any difference, that's their business, not ours. And you know, we just assume that they don't have any real disagreement. They have nothing really to fight over. What's the big deal? You know, Hiranyakashipu or, you know, Ravana. You know, what's that to Krishna and Shiva? Nothing. Yeah, you know, this pipsqueak demon, you know, why have a fight over him? It's not because of, you know. And Krishna's not going to abandon Vishnu and Vishnu's devotees just to satisfy his own flatterers. Look, Shiva's not going to do that. He's Nitya Vishnu Janatvaya. He and Shukadeva. Shukadeva also, but that's a word applied to Shukadeva, but it applies also to Shiva. He's eternally, always, constantly sympathetic to the devotees, to the Vaishnavas. Well, Shiva says that, and he's not lying. He's always dear to the Vaishnavas. And we shouldn't be inimical to him. We may get annoyed at the behavior and the attitude of some of his devotees. We shouldn't project that on Lord Shiva himself. We should not have bad feelings against Lord Shiva or neglect him. We shouldn't be inimical or neglectful of Lord Shiva. Some ISKCON devotees, you know, in the early years and then even nowadays, some less mature devotees got the wrong idea. They were opposed to Lord Shiva. We're not. We shouldn't be. Or that we just ignore him because he's always some bad thing we don't go near. No, we have to respect him. We only worship Vishnu, but we honor him as the greatest Vaishnava. Yeah.
Is it defense
or
is
it
that they think that half of the nature of
Vishnu
is
demonic? Well, I could say that theoretically, but Prabhupada and his godbrother were discussing that just that, so I think Prabhupada was willing to entertain the idea, so I can't say it's demoniac. Yeah, I have to go with that. Prabhupada, you know, was not against at least considering that interpretation. I gotta modify my views according to what Prabhupada said. We can look it up. It's there. There's a discussion. I think it's in folio. Discussion between Prabhupada and Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj. They had a meeting and they were discussing Lord Shiva. We can check exactly what they said.
I have a separate folio of Sridhar Maharaj.
Yes.
With his conversations
with Prabhupada?
Well, Prabhupada, as soon as Prabhupada left, you know, some GBCs came with
right.
A separate folio.
Right.
Jabhatan Maharaj was coming.
Anyway, but this was like in 1975 or so. There was a meeting between the two of them. Yeah, we can look and see what was said. And you know, maybe I don't remember it exactly right. So maybe there's a way in which Lord Shiva manifests. Because he's in charge of the mode of ignorance. It's sort of his service to act like a demon. You know, to act like one. He has to give protection to those who are demoniac. And so he has to act like one of them sometimes. But how to judge that? That's hard to say. How we're supposed to view it. You know, you can't judge a great soul like that by just how he behaves on the outside. You know, that you can't decide what he's actually thinking inside by what way he behaves on the outside always.
Maybe some light can be shed by this episode which was described in the first Gita, when there was this conflict between Lord Shiva and his followers and Bhrigu Muni.
Yeah, fourth Gita, yeah. Yes.
Bhrigu Muni is very much in mode of goodness, and all his followers are supposed to be so. And Lord Shiva extended was not very much.
Yeah, but maybe that mode of goodness was not completely pure. Because those who were situated in pure goodness, they wouldn't get in a quarrel with Lord Shiva. So it was tinged with passion. And therefore a fight was there. But I wonder, you know, I don't know if we should say that Lord Shiva was really involved in that fight. He was just caught up in it, because it's not that Lord Shiva didn't do the cursing, his followers did. We can't judge Lord Shiva's inner attitude even by that. He says he's always friend of Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. I think we have to accept that. Even if he acts like an opponent. Demon means opponent of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, the demigods. That's a demon. And Lord Shiva sometimes acts like a demon, but it doesn't mean he's a demon in his heart. But we have to look. I think we should look at what Prabhupada and Srila Maharaj were saying, and try to follow what they meant by it.
Also, there is descriptions of 10 offenses in the Padma.
Yes.
And second offense is described there. If you look very closely to the Sanskrit text, it is said that. We consider Lord Shiva is similar, or the power of names of Lord Shiva the same as the power of Lord Vishnu. It is one thing, and to consider the difference is also offense.
Yes. There's two different ways. The offense can be read both ways. To see a difference or to see no difference.
Yeah. It's very close relationship.
It's a complex relationship. It's difference and non-difference.
I mean that if we don't understand this tattoo very well, then we could actually make this a second offense.
Yes. Yeah, if we disrespect Lord Shiva, then we are committing that offense. It amounts to Nama Parad. It's also the first offense. It's offending, great Vaishnava. It's the first and second offense, which is pretty bad.
Then, again the same thing about Vaishnava Prad. If a Vaishnava who did a lot of great service and things like that, if he, does something which is unacceptable after a period of time, as they say, go into Maya or something, how should one...
Krishna iti yasi giritam manasadvita. If someone has chanted Hare Krishna, you should offer him respect within the mind. If he's contaminated and you don't want to get contaminated by getting too close to him, then you keep a distance and offer respect in the mind. So that goes to anybody who's ever chanted Hare Krishna. What to speak of someone who's done great service, preaching and other service? Then you got to maintain an attitude of respect no matter how he falls down. But if he's fallen and speaking nonsense and maybe become inimical, then you have to keep at a distance and offer your respect. But in your heart, you should still, respect that this person tried to give his life to the mission of Prabhupada, therefore, I can't condemn him, no matter what he's done since then. And he may come back again. We see now, I could see it in Mayapur this year, many devotees who have been away for decades are coming back. And they've been through everything, going back to the material world, and gotten reactions for their offenses, and they're deciding, they got to come back to Prabhupada. this is happening. You know, time, this is the, we go through periods. We went through a rough period. Now we're coming to a period of devotees who've gone out, left ISKCON, and you know, we had such a hemorrhage of devotees. A lot of them are gradually realizing that they can't stay away. They have to come back.
But when, like, you know, in a situation where a devotee has gone away and done something wrong.
Yes.
Maybe inimical to ISKCON also, and you know, among the many other devotees are speaking ill of him or things like that.
Not good that they should. When someone falls down, you're really stomping on his grave when you badmouth him. He's very vulnerable when he suffered a fall down, and if you badmouth him, he'll never want, and he'll be ashamed to ever come back. Prabhupada didn't like that when someone, you know, what they called blooped, you know, left ISKCON. Back then, if you walked out the door of the temple, you were finished. When I was living in New York City, if someone, you know, packed his bags and left, and he was, you know, he as good as he went to hell. You know, there wasn't the idea of fringes being, you know, living on the outside. If you stepped out the door of the ashram, you know, you were Nagatikotopi. You know, no one ever find you again. And that's New York City. Later, I lived in Hawaii, where periodically, every couple of years, the temple empties out. Everyone bloops, and they get new devotees. And everyone, and the old devotees, you know, who've left the temple years ago, they're all living in trees someplace, eating pineapples. You know, and they live, they manage. You know, in Hawaii, you can manage. You know, living outside the ashram, you just live in a cave or in a tree. But in New York City, if you step out the door of the ashram, you're finished. Yeah, so that was what the concept back then, is that you know, you can't, you know, if you walk away from ISKCON, we'll never see you again. Yeah. But actually, we see that devotees do come back. And so when someone does leave, psychologically or physically, if we badmouth them too much, then that's going to shame them and discourage them from coming back. And Prabhupada chastised his disciples for doing that. When someone left, to say bad things about him, and he said, "No, then he'll never come back again." He made a public declaration of his fall down in front of everybody, condemned him, and made a public announcement. Now he'll never want to, he'll be ashamed to ever come back. So Prabhupada chastised his disciples when they did that.
So it shouldn't be discussed.
No, it shouldn't be discussed, but it should be discussed tactfully. Give the person a chance to rectify himself and come back. Don't condemn him. You know, we shouldn't have, except for in very rare cases, excommunication. You know, we condemn you to eternal hell. That's not our philosophy. You know, that you're not allowed to ever serve Krishna again. We can't say that to anybody. We can't deny anybody the right to serve Krishna, no matter what they are. Maybe we can deny that you can't step foot in our temple because of what you do, you know. We want to protect our women and children, therefore we can't let you step foot in our temple. You know, protect the devotees from hearing blasphemy and deviant philosophy. Okay, we can do that kind of thing, but you can't tell someone, you know, you're so fallen you can never serve Krishna, you can't chant Hare Krishna. We can never say that to anybody. And we shouldn't discourage anybody so much by bad-mouthing them, even when they fall down.
And in cases where somebody comes and wants to discuss somebody like that, what should one do? I mean, wants
discuss
to know an opinion. Or
no, it's not that things have to be kept secret, but we don't go out of a way to make, you know, publicity against someone when he has trouble. Because not that things shouldn't be discussed. They should be discussed, you know, face to face. You know, when you put things out on the internet, then you know, they become, you know, public to everybody. Things can be discussed tactfully, face to face. But when you make a statement about somebody publicly in front of, you know, on the internet, then that's it. Then you can't take it back again.
What about with, like, GBCs and SNSCs? Because usually lately when something happens, then they'll post it over the internet. So, I mean, in a nice way.
They do it when necessary. Facts, you know. But it's done carefully.
Yeah.
It should be done carefully.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, are you well? Yeah, not to, you know, to drive someone 10 feet underground, you know, and you never give them a chance to come up again.
I guess it just lets the facts be known, but they don't write it in such a heavy way.
The GBC have learned not to.
Yeah.
You know, that it's give a person a chance to come back again. And so many devotees have fallen down. So people in glass houses can't throw stones. How can we be so self-righteous? Someone has fallen down. You know, anybody can fall down. Yeah. We shouldn't think that we're so, you know, much more perfect that it'll never happen to us. And therefore we can self-righteously, you know, look down at those who have trouble. Okay. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.